down the road, you'll be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than the ones you did. So dream, explore, say yes to life. Be inspired to live life as an exciting adventure of discovery. You are listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, and I'm your host, Mark Sussnow. Hi, everybody. This is Mark Sussnow. Welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show. Every week I invite various cutting-edge thought leaders, people who, some of them are visionaries, people who can guide us, inspire us to think in new ways, to think about things that maybe we weren't thought were possible. And with that in mind, I invited somebody who has a history in that field. He was one of the first people that talked about a way of relating to chronic illness, chronic diseases. He wrote a book called Reversing Heart Disease and started a whole program based on lifestyle changes. Now that program has expanded to prostate cancer, to most chronic diseases. And he's written several books. He has a new book coming out in January called Undo It. It's a way of looking at how to have a different approach to many of the chronic diseases by lifestyle. And rather than me going on and on, I want to welcome Dr. Dean Ornish, who's been I've been a fan of his for years. I've read most of his book. I've been involved in his program. So welcome Dr. Ornish to the Inspire Possibility Show. I'm looking forward to your words of wisdom.
Well, thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
Yes. And so what I'm curious about is to this idea that you have, and I know you've done a lot of work with heart disease, and now you're really with the aging population and a lot of talk about dementia and Alzheimer's. Your new book is really how lifestyle changes can reverse most chronic diseases. And how did you come to that place of starting with heart disease to expand it now to cancer and diabetes, and what was the process that kind of got you from one disease to most all of chronic diseases?
Well, I appreciate that. The book is called Undo It. It'll be published by Random House. Valentine Books as their lead nonfiction title in the first week in January. So if your readers are interested in pre-ordering it, it's available on Amazon now. They can search just by name Ornish or whatever. That publishers like that, because if they see there's interest in a book, then they'll put resources behind promoting it. And for me, that's important, not just for the obvious reasons of wanting to sell books, but because awareness to me is always the first step in healing. And part of the value of research and why I've spent 40 years doing studies is that it can redefine what's possible for people. And by doing so, it can give millions of people at this point new hope and new choices that they didn't have before. So we started with heart disease, and in a series of studies, we were able to show for the first time that even severe heart disease could often begin to reverse when people made much bigger changes than people had recommended up, than the doctors had recommended up till that time. And it's the same program for all of these different conditions. It's a whole foods, plant-based diet that's low in fat and in sugar. It's not one or the other. It's both. Moderate exercise, various meditation and other stress management techniques. And what we call love and intimacy, or social support, the sense of connection and community between people. Or to reduce it even further, to eat well, move more, stress less, love more. Boom, that's it. And the more diseases we study and the more underlying mechanisms we look at, the more reasons we have to explain why these simple changes are so powerful and how quickly people can get better. And so we started with heart disease, then we were able to show that diabetes, type 2 diabetes could be reversed, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity. We did a study with Dr. Peter Carroll here at UCSF, and the late Dr. Bill Fair, who, when he was the chair of urology at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, showing that these same lifestyle changes could also slow, stop, and even reverse the progression of men with early-stage prostate cancer, and by extension, likely breast cancer. We did a study with Craig Venter showing that these same lifestyle changes change your genes, actually turn on the good genes that keep you healthy and turn off the bad genes that cause so many of these chronic diseases, and particularly turning off what are called oncogenes that promote prostate, breast, and colon cancer. It's just amazing.
So we talk a little bit about that, this idea of genes. So there is this belief system that you have certain genes and you're kind of stuck with them. You have a bad gene, you're doomed to certain illnesses, certain consequences. And are you suggesting that we can change the effect of the genes?
Not suggesting, but we've actually proven that when you change your lifestyle, it often changes your genes. Mm-hmm. Turning on the good genes to keep you healthy and turning off the genes that tend to cause us to get sick. Over 500 genes in just 3 months. And, you know, right, when I was in medical school, we were taught, you know, the only way to change your genes is to change your parents, which obviously is hard
right.
to do.
Late,
you're
right.
stuck with them. And even, you know, and so, even when I've been working with President Bill Clinton since 93, when he first became president, Hillary asked me to train the chefs that cook for them at the White House and Air Force One and Camp David and so on. And then 10 years ago, he ended up having bypass surgery, and his bypass is clogged up, and he was told that it was all in his genes. And I sent him an email, and I said, no, it's not all in your genes. If it were all in your genes, you'd be a victim, and you're not a victim. You're one of the most powerful guys on the planet. And he's talked about this publicly, by the way. And so he began going on the same program, and he's done very well since then. And so it's not to blame, but to empower. Because, again, if it's all in your genes, what can you do? But if
right.
there's a lot you can do, that's encouraging. And one of the things we found was that when you make these lifestyle changes, it even reverses aging at a cellular level by lengthening telomeres, the ends of our chromosomes that regulate how long we live. We did that with Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn, who got the Nobel Prize for her pioneering work with telomeres. And then we did a study with Craig Venter, as I mentioned earlier, that over 500 genes were changed. So we're
how
now
do they,
just beginning.
How do they document these studies to notice these genes were changed? How do they do that? How do they document that they're, you know, I mean, do they have this before, or how do they get a timeline with this?
We measure their genes before and after. In this case, these were men with early stage prostate cancer that we had prostate biopsies from. So we could look at their genes at the beginning, and then we looked at their genes just 3 months later when they had a repeat biopsy, and found that over 500 genes were changed in just 3 months. And we're about to do the first, we just actually began the first randomized trial to see whether these same lifestyle changes might be able to reverse the progression of early stage Alzheimer's disease, in collaboration with Dr. Bruce Miller, who's the chair of the Memory and Aging Center at UCSF, and Dr. Joel Kaplan and others. And I think we're at a place with respect to Alzheimer's very similar to where we were with heart disease 40 years ago. In other words, there's every reason to think that it will work. Less intensive interventions may slow or even sometimes stop the progression of Alzheimer's. We think that a more intensive intervention can actually reverse it. And so the new book, the Undo It book, is really based on the idea that, you know, why is it that these same, with all this talk about personalization and personalized medicine, it wasn't like there was one set of diet and lifestyle interventions for reversing heart disease, a different one for prostate cancer, your genes or your telomeres or whatever. It was the same for all of them. How is that? And it turns out that, and they were kind of the radical unifying theory that I'm putting forth in this new book, is that although we tend to think these diseases are all very different from each other, that prostate cancer is different than heart disease, different than diabetes, and so on, that in one way they're different, but they also share very similar or the same underlying biological mechanisms, like chronic emotional stress and sympathetic nervous system stimulation, changes in immune function, changes in oxidative stress, changes in the microbiome, changes in angiogenesis and stasis, and what's called autophagy and apoptosis, where your body kind of eats those cells that are not functioning well. And each of these mechanisms, in turn, is direct, and chronic inflammation is another big one. And each of these mechanisms, in turn, is affected by what we eat, how we respond to stress, how much exercise we get, and how much love and support we have. And so it's kind of a unifying theory that explains why these simple changes are so powerful and how quickly people can get better and how far-reaching they are. And you don't necessarily need, I mean, now if you've got a, you know, a particular melanoma and they can do a targeted immunotherapy towards that cell line, that's awesome. But for the vast majority of chronic diseases, These simple lifestyle changes can not only help prevent, but often even reverse them. And the only side effects, unlike most things we do as doctors, are good ones.
So what I'm curious about is to hear you talk about, let's take the basic program. I know it's the whole plant diet and in a stress reduction program, a certain amount of cardio, moderate exercise, and you say make time for love and intimacy. Let's take these individually and talk about the challenge with each one. So let's talk about the whole foods diet, low in fat and refined carbohydrates. Is that definitely a vegetarian diet?
You know, I don't really see it more as a challenge as an opportunity, because the opportunity is that many people think that, you know, to be powerful, it has to be a drug or a surgical device,
right,
or a technique or something. And
yeah,
people often have a hard time believing that these simple changes can make such a powerful difference. And I think our unique contribution has been to use these very high-tech, state-of-the-art scientific measures to prove how powerful these very simple and low-tech and low-cost interventions can be and how quickly people can get better. So one of them is a whole foods plant-based diet. What does that mean? And these are for reversing disease. Now, for preventing disease, you know, you have a spectrum of choices. I wrote a book earlier called The Spectrum that was based on the finding that the more you change your lifestyle, the more you improve at any age. And you decide how much you want to change if you're just trying to get your cholesterol down a bit or lose a few pounds or whatever. But if you're trying to reverse a life-threatening illness, that's really more the pound of cure than the ounce of prevention. And it takes a lot. And that's why we were the first to prove you could reverse all these things in scientific ways, because most people didn't go far enough. And so what we're talking about now is the diet for reversing heart disease and these other conditions. And it's a whole foods, plant-based diet. It's fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, soy products in their natural, unrefined form. It's low in fat and low in sugar. You know, we get into these kind of false debates of, oh, it's low carb, it's low fat. I debated Dr. Atkins more times than I care to think about before he died, and his autopsy showed he died of heart disease, which is another story. But it's not, you know, he was a low carb guy, so I got pegged as a low fat guy. It's never just been about fat. It's low in fat, it's low in sugar and refined carbs. It's very low in animal products. It's mostly a plant-based fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, and soy products. Now, within that, you can eat, I mean, you've been through our program at the Marin Cardiology Group, which, for your listeners, if they're interested, just go to our website, ornish.com. It lists all the sites that we've trained, and Medicare is now paying for it. Most insurance companies are paying for it. It's a 72-hour, 9-week program.
I just want to, you know, acknowledge you, because I remember hearing you talk 25 years ago in Mill Valley when you had this vision. I think your vision was, wow, if I could only get insurance to cover this. And here it is. It's amazing how far this program has come, and the fact that Medicare is covering it. It's just amazing how much you've accomplished. And I know that Forbes and Time acknowledged you as one of the most influential people of the era for the work you've done, the pioneer really in changing consciousness and changing attitude and possibilities. And so
I really appreciate that. That's very kind of you. You know, it took us 16 years to get Medicare coverage. I had no idea it was going to be so hard. And that was with the support of Bill Clinton when he was president, but also Newt Gingrich when he was Speaker of the House, and lots of other people. But it was worth it because, you know, I have a nonprofit institute called the Preventive Medicine Research Institute that I started back in 1984. And we train hospitals and clinics around the country early on before we had the reimbursement. And we got, as now, you know, bigger changes in lifestyle, better clinical outcomes, bigger cost savings, and better adherence than anyone ever shown. But a number of the sites closed down because we didn't have the insurance and Medicare reimbursement. So the painful lesson was, it doesn't matter how good it is clinically, if it's not reimbursable, it's not sustainable.
True.
So that's what set me on the 16-year journey to get Medicare coverage. And they created a new benefit category to cover our program. And now that they are, we've been training hospitals and clinics and physician groups around the country in this new paradigm of healthcare, and it's working. And most insurance companies are now paying for it too. So now we can make it available to the people who most need it. I didn't want this to be concierge medicine. I really wanted it to be available to as many people as possible. And so I just
remember your frustration, because you had such a strong belief about what was possible. And you just couldn't quite connect it at that time. to get the support that was necessary, but you kept at it and it became a reality. And now you just have made such a huge difference on the planet. There's so many
people. Well, thank you. Well, it's hard doing this work, but
it is
worth it. That's a part of what makes it meaningful. And, you know, when something takes 16 years, it's not like in year 15, you know, it's only got one more year to go. You still don't know if it's ever going to happen.
Right.
But I knew that it didn't matter how many, you know, we could do 1,000 studies with 1,000,000 patients, it would always remain on the fringes. But if we could change reimbursement, that would change medical practice and even medical education. And that's fortunately what's finally been happening now.
So we have the plant food, basic plant food, and you say very little animal products. I mean,
it's basically no animal products at all.
Uh-huh.
For the early reversing heart disease programs, we included a cup a day of non-fat dairy or egg whites. And, you know, that's still an option for some people. But for the reversing prostate cancer and other conditions, I think it's even better to eliminate those if you can. But the diet is only one of the four components. As you know, the other two are moderate exercise, you know, walking a half an hour a day, various meditation and yoga-based stress management techniques for an hour a day, ideally, and what we call love and support, which in our program is a support group where people can connect at a deep level and talk about what's really going on in their lives in authentic ways without feeling like someone's going to judge or criticize or reject them. It's incredibly meaningful with the breakdown of the social networks that have occurred in the last 50 years to have a place where you can really just be yourself and be authentic and connect deeply with other people, as you found. I mean, what was your experience with that? I'm just curious.
Of the love and support?
Yeah.
Well, I think that it's critical, you know, to have that in your life. And I think that I kind of had that already, but a lot of people didn't. And I think what's more important is they get a taste of it, of what's possible, and to continue afterwards of reaching out. Cause I think the biggest problem people have is whenever there's like a big upset in their life, or they have an illness, let's say they're getting a divorce, there's sometimes a sense of shame, and people, what they do is they isolate themselves. Instead of reaching out, connecting, they
Absolutely.
Tend to isolate themselves, and it causes despair, which, you know, it's a cycle, which causes bad health, and they don't take care of themselves. So I think in a way for a lot of people, that the support group, a part of the program, allows people to get an inkling of what's possible.
In
that kind of system. But it is for people, I mean, you know, you probably experience the same thing. It's when people are facing a crisis, a personal crisis, there is a sense of shame. But once they reach out, they find out there's so many other people that have the same experience. They go, oh, wow, I'm not alone. I can share this with so many people that are going through what I'm going through. And that's really what I find was valuable there is you can, you know, it's not the kind of conversation you can have with everybody about, hey, I have heart disease, I've had this or I had that. You know, you gotta be real careful.
Yeah, it's true.
And so it's great to have people you can share that kind of thing with. And I know support groups, whatever it is, whatever your common issue is so important. And shows like this where people want to be inspired. And I think to talk about inspiration, I think the key to inspiration is that it isn't about who's going to inspire you. That's part of it. But more important is you have to want to be inspired. You have to want to grow. You have to want to change.
Well, that's part of the value of being sick, if there is a value in that, is that it's like, okay, I mean, change is hard, but if you're in enough pain, the idea of changing or trying things new or relating to the world in a different way is more appealing. It's like, wow, that's kind of weird. Meditation, I mean, really? Come on. Vegetarian diet, really? But boy, I'm hurting so bad. Let me try this weird stuff. And then we try it. And because these underlying biological mechanisms are so dynamic, most people feel so much better so quickly. It really reframes the reason for making these changes from fear of dying, which is really not sustainable.
Big one.
Joy
that's a big
pleasure
one.
And feeling good, which really are.
That's a big one.
Yep.
Big motivator.
So that's you know, what we're doing. And it's very encouraging. Now, did you have heart disease when you started this?
I did. Yeah.
Were you having any chest pain or angina?
I was having slight angina, but I had bypass surgery like 4 years ago, and I was having something. I wasn't quite sure what it was, And I had always
even after the surgery.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden it started, and I wasn't sure if it was acid reflux or what it was. And then because that was a symptom I had prior to my surgery, was I was getting these burning sensations, and my regular doctors diagnosed it as acid reflux, and, and so I went for a test, and they did a test, and they determined I needed a bypass. So I didn't necessarily have a big incident, but I was fortunate and grateful for the care that I got. But I was always into a low fat diet and a healthy diet because I had, my father died very young, and I've been into meditation and yoga since the 70s. And I've always been into looking to how can I evolve. And recently, I've been doing Qigong instead of my sitting meditation, which I love. I cannot believe how much I love it. And that's the thing too, to have a personal path is for a lot of people. And I know you've had a personal path for all these years too. And for a lot of people, a lot of people have reasons why they don't, about having a regular meditation program, I don't have the time, or whatever. And I did this because we have this anxiety. When I was a young lawyer, before I got into the work I do then, I had a lot of anxiety. I mean, I was, you know, a trial lawyer. You didn't know how to deal with it. So I got into meditation, which at a young age, which I still, you know, I still have that practice, which has helped tremendously. But I had a motivation, and unless you have a motivation, you're not going to change. And even in the program, some people you could tell they'll try it. But that extra thing you have to have that desire. Have you found that there's some people that are just resistant to change? I mean, how do you motivate those people?
Well, again, fear is not a very good motivator. At least it's not a sustainable one. I mean, for a few weeks after someone's had a heart attack or a bypass, they'll do, as I'm sure you did, pretty much anything your doctor tells you, but it doesn't last. What lasts is if it feels good, if it's pleasurable, if you have love and support, if you have a sense of community, you know, these are the things that really matter. And because these underlying biological mechanisms are so dynamic, especially when you make really big changes in your diet and lifestyle, most people find they feel so much better so quickly, it reframes the reason for making the changes from preventing something bad from happening years down the road, which is more of a fear-based approach, to really feeling good very quickly. So like you were having angina before you started our program. What happened after you entered? Did it get better?
It's better now, yeah. Definitely better. And I was always active. I mean, through the whole thing, I was always very active. I was a tennis player. And it didn't really stop me from doing anything. But it's better now. I mean, I don't have any symptoms.
Well, that's not better. That's a lot better. So you're basically, you don't have any angina now, right?
I don't have any angina.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, for someone who, yours wasn't as bad as some people, but for some people, it's like they can't walk across the street without getting pain, or they can't make love with their spouse or play with their kids or go back to work without pain. And usually we find, as you did, the pain goes away in most people within a few weeks. Then they say, well, yeah, I like eating cheeseburgers, but not that much, because I'd much rather eat vegetables and be able to make love with my spouse, you know, than to eat a McDonald's. Like, you know, that's an easy choice.
What was puzzling for a lot of people, they said that, wow, you know, you always have been active, you had a healthy lifestyle, and still you had these issues. And my regular cardiologist said, he said, you know, if you didn't take care of yourself, you would have died 15 years ago. And so I always was kind of doing somewhat of the program that you're adopting. I had pretty much doing that at a certain level, but I still had these problems.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, you know, sometimes people need the pound of cure. Once you've got heart disease, especially, moderate changes aren't generally not enough to reverse it, whereas more intensive ones are. That's what we're able to show. And I think these findings are really giving, as you've indicated, many, many people new hope and new choices that if you're willing to make these changes, there's a really good chance that you're likely to get better and to feel better to the degree that you make them at any age.
Right. And I think what you just said, Dean, is that, you know, people hope that it's going to be a magic pill, But it's not just like you do this for a while and you don't do it. It's to come back to your basic philosophy. It's a lifestyle choice about your attitude, about the way you relate to people, about the way you relate to the environment, and it's about being more conscious.
Well, the environment's a good thing to mention briefly before we run out of time is that, you know, many people were surprised to learn that more global warming is caused by eating livestock than all forms of transportation combined. In fact, I used to get into friendly arguments with Al Gore about this, and because he's a cattle rancher, and he finally became a vegan a few years ago because he realized that, you know, it's not enough to talk about driving smaller cars or fluorescent light bulbs, that the major cause of global warming is what we eat. And it takes 14 times more energy to make a pound of meat-based protein than plant-based protein. There's enough food in the world now to feed pretty much everyone. You know, I was on the board of the San Francisco Food Bank for a few years a while ago, and I was shocked to hear that 1 out of 5 kids in the Bay Area goes to bed hungry every night. And this is one of the most affluent parts of the country. It's pitiful. It doesn't have to be that way. And so I find that if it's meaningful, it's sustainable. And so when people realize that something as primal as what you put in your mouth every day not only affects you, but affects the planet as well, it imbues those choices with meaning and makes them more sustainable.
You know, it's interesting. I think I told you off air that the first time I heard you talk was about 25 years ago at Glenn and Amy Baxter's house in Mill Valley when your, I think your first book had come out. And it was either the month before or the month after John Robbins has spoke, who I think didn't he write Diet for New America, which was
I wrote the forward to that book actually.
Yeah, which was just what you were talking about, and so it was like 2 months in a row I got the message.
Well, there it was. Like that old joke. It's like that old joke about the guy who is on a boat that sinks and he's in the ocean, and the helicopter comes over and says, it lowers the ladder, says, climb aboard. He goes, I don't need your helicopter. My faith in God is so strong, God will save me. And so he flies away. And then the Coast Guard goes by, and the same thing. It's kind of a Shaggy Dog story. And in the interest of time, I'll kind of get to the point. And then a motorboat comes by and won't get on. The guy drowns. He goes to heaven and says, God, I had such faith in you. Why did you forsake me? He goes, you fool. I sent you a helicopter. I sent you a Coast Guard.
Right.
You
know,
so sometimes recognizing when those patterns happen is God's way of remaining anonymous.
No, that's a great story. I mean, it's a classic. So what I like to do is ask all my guests a few questions to kind of wrap up the show.
Uh-huh.
And one of them, since this is the Inspire Possibility Show, is, and it seems like you've kind of answered this with your work, but other than your work, what inspires you right now?
My wife and my kids inspire me every day. My wife Anne, I co-wrote the new Undo It book with, which I'm hoping everybody will order and tell the publisher this is a good thing. She's as brilliant as she is beautiful, and developed the whole learning management system when we train hospitals and clinics around the country. She developed if you go to ornish.com, that's our website. Everything she does, she makes beautiful. And our two kids, Lucas, who's 17, and our daughter, Jasmine, or Jazzy, who's 9.
Wow.
My happiest times are when I'm with them.
Mm-hmm. And what gives you hope?
You know, all the work that we do gives me hope. As we continue to do research showing that these simple lifestyle changes can actually reverse the most common chronic diseases that account for 86% of the $3.4 trillion we spend every year and untold suffering, that we can actually reverse those and thereby give literally at this point millions of people new hope and new choices. That gives me a lot of hope as well. It gets me out of bed every day.
So if you were going to say one thing to our listeners right now, what is it?
Don't underestimate the power of these simple lifestyle changes to totally transform your life to the degree that you make them. And by the way, before we run out of time,
we have a few more minutes. We can keep talking.
That's okay. Is that if you or someone you know has early stage Alzheimer's disease or mild cognitive impairment and might want to be in our study and you live in the San Francisco Bay Area, give us, go onto our website at ornish.com and it will, let us know about that.
I sure will. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to be my guest, and it's a real honor and privilege. And I've been following you for many, many years, and I think I mentioned a few of my friends have worked in your program in different capacities, and I just think what you're doing is fantastic, and I want to support you in any way I can. And to our listeners out there, you can get any of Dean's books, Dr. Ornish's books, on Amazon. Go to their website at ornish.com, find out more about them, enroll in their programs. And in the meantime, until next week when we have another enlightening, envisioning human being that's going to bless us, in the meantime, journey on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. I hope you feel inspired to take the next step in your life. And if you haven't already, please take the time to visit my website at inspirepossibility.com and discover the various services and products we offer that could just very well change your life.